talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Laura T. Coffey, author of My Old Dog, Rescued Pets with Remarkable Second Acts. The book, done in collaboration with photographer Lori Fusaro, touts the virtues of adopting senior shelter dogs. They accomplish this through a series of vignettes spotlighting elderly dogs with remarkable stories, or the humans who adopted them who also have remarkable stories, or often both. This ranges from David Rosenfeld and his wife, who are so committed to taking in older dogs, they currently live with 21, and at one time had as many as 42 dogs, to George Clooney, who adopts an older Cocker Spaniel named Einstein. We'll hear about the book and many of the wonderful dogs therein when I speak with Laura T. Coffey in a few moments here on Talking Animals. We also touch on Nico Case, a singer-songwriter and dog fanatic and past guest on Talking Animals, who wrote the foreword to the book. In a moment, in fact, we'll hear a rarely heard dog song by Nico. Also later in this program, I'll speak briefly with Rayanna Sachs, founder of the Little Cats Rescue, who is contending with some medical challenges that require temporarily altering the way the organization operates, including needing to find a home for about 30 of the cats who live there. Before we speak of Laura Coffey, though, I thought we'd hear the aforementioned Nico Case rarity. It's short, but it's sweet. This is I Want a Dog by Nico Case on Talking Animals. That's I Want a Dog from the fabulous Nico Case, who now I think will be more inclined to seek out an older dog than a puppy. And not coincidentally, she wrote the foreword for My Old Dog, Rescued Pets with Remarkable Second Acts, the book by my guest Laura T. Coffey. Let's meet Laura now with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Laura T. Coffey to Talking Animals. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I didn't know this when we booked today's show, but it turns out you have strong ties to the area. So before we jump into dog talk, let's address that a little bit.
Yes, I grew up in the Tampa Bay area. I actually grew up in Largo, Florida, and attended Largo Middle School, Largo High School, USF.
Right, but it even goes further in terms of media action.
Yes, I worked for the St. Petersburg Times, now the Tampa Bay Times, for many years as a writer, and I had a column there in the business section for years called 10 Tips. And I still have a lot of friends there in the area, and it's great. I loved working at the Times.
That's cool. And also, I can say it because otherwise it sounds like you might be trying to curry favor, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, you're a bit of a WMNF fan as well, as it turns out.
Yes, I am. So. I'm a huge WMNF fan, and every time I'm in town and I visit my dad and I'm driving around, all I do is play that station the entire time, and I'm so grateful to have WMNF there.
Oh, all right. Well, flattery will get you everywhere, Laura. So, all right, so let's start with some mechanics of the book, and then we'll get into some dogs of the book. First of all, talk briefly about what you do now, your day job from you know, your stint at then St. Petersburg Times and other stuff. What is it you do now?
Right now, I'm a writer, editor, and producer for Today.com. It's the website of the Today Show, and I've worked there since 2008, and it's really, really fun. There are lots of opportunities to do really compelling, interesting, you know, human interest feature stories, and either edit them or write them, and I love working there, so that's a really great gig.
Cool. Anyway, I think it's fair to say this book is maybe comes out of that, but it's as much about images as it is about words. Lori Fusaro is a terrific photographer. How did you guys team up?
It actually stemmed from a Today.com story that I wrote about Lori Fusaro. She's an amazing Los Angeles photographer. Back in 2013, I wrote a story about Lori. She had launched a really beautiful senior dog photography project, and her goal was to change people's perceptions of senior shelter animals and encourage them not to overlook the older ones. And I found her photos online and gave her a call and wrote a feature story about her in the summer of 2013, and we did a photo gallery of some of her dog photos with that story, and the story just went completely crazy. It got shared and shared and shared all over the world, and ultimately led us to team up and do this My Old Dog book together.
So basically, the response that story that you did on Lori and her work generated such a nutty viral thing. It was like, okay, we got to do more with this. There's obviously a real interest and maybe even a real need.
Yes, and it clearly resonated with people. It touched them because people could see anyone who's a dog person, anyone who loves animals. You know, the one, you know, sad detail I'll mention is that, you know, nearly 3 million dogs and cats are put down in shelters every year, and older animals often are the most overlooked. They're the highest risk population in shelters around the United States. And knowing how sweet and wonderful dogs are, and how tuned in they are to their surroundings, and to think of them being alone at the end, it really got to people.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea, it's really catching on. There's a true senior dog rescue movement now that is sweeping across not only North America, but other countries around the world, we found. And people are realizing that dogs over the age of 6 or 7 make ideal companions. You could jump ahead to the best part.
Yeah.
And have this great friend, and they really shouldn't be overlooked. And so it touched people.
Yeah. A lot less chewing of shoes, for example, and other things like that. But
yes, I mean, it's a big, big deal. It's a great, these dogs are great fits for people with busy lifestyles, and they're often already house trained. They often have wound up in a shelter through no fault of their own. There's some kind of a life upheaval that happened on the part of their, you know, human owners. And many of them are accustomed to being in a home, and they're confused about why they're there. And it's a really wonderful and meaningful and rewarding form of adoption to get them out of the shelter, and then see them feel so relieved to be somewhere. Once they decompress a bit and they realize they're somewhere where they feel safe and welcome, their personalities blossom and they come out of their little shells, and it's so rewarding. And so people we met again and again, there's nothing sad about doing this at all. They said it was hands down the best thing they ever did.
Yeah. Well, you certainly have a lot of vignettes, and again, gorgeous photography punctuating all those vignettes by Lori that really underscores that. And really, one of the things we'll maybe get into more a bit later too, but that you touched on, I think is really important, because I think for a lot of people, it might make sense, the idea of adopting an older dog, but depending on sort of their experiences and just their feelings, the idea of having a shorter time before you say goodbye is perhaps a stumbling block for some. And I think this book, among other things that it does, hopefully really sort of makes the case for why that just should not be a stumbling block.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is, it's always sad to say goodbye to our pets, goodbye to our dogs. None of us ever want to do it. We always want our dogs to live longer than they do. But the thing about this is, going into this situation knowing that you're making such a difference for a dog who otherwise would have run out of options without you intervening, you get so much in return from doing that. You get affection and gratitude and unconditional love and all these happy memories, and it's life-changing for people. It ends up being incredibly transforming. And this happened for Lori, the photographer for the book. She took in an older dog named, at the time the dog at the shelter was named Shady. It was a 16-year-old pit bull, and she felt so sorry for this shelter dog, and decided that she would take this dog home and maybe give her a couple of weeks of affection. And then what happens as soon as she renamed her Sunny, gave her a more optimistic name,
yeah.
brings this dog
kind of
home.
Flips that over. Yeah.
Yeah. And this dog lived almost 3 years with her, and it blossomed and thrived in her care, and it's one of the things that inspired her to do the photo project that I originally saw that led to the story that ultimately led to the book.
Right. No, it's a clear path, and it makes so much sense. And then you really, again, the book is just chock full of stories from different angles of dog stories like that, where the dog has sort of a remarkable story, or has this, as you say in the subtitle, second act, and or the people are often no less remarkable than the dogs that you're profiling. I mean, for example, I've become sort of obsessed with the David Rosenfeld Debbie Myers saga. Maybe you could summarize their story a little bit and explain how you and Lori found them.
Yes. So David Rosenfeld is a mystery novelist and writer. He's very, very funny, very self-deprecating guy. And he and his wife, Debbie Myers, she's a retired media executive, they lived in Southern California for years, and they had a dog rescue organization there called the Terra Foundation. And they would primarily take in older, large shelter dogs who had nowhere to go, because the large, older dogs actually have a harder time getting placed, you know?
Yeah.
And so they had a lot of older, large dogs. And then the time came for them to retire and move to their this retirement place, spot where they had bought a home and they wanted to live in Maine. And then they had this challenge of how do they move across the country from, you know, Orange County in California to Maine with 25 large geriatric rescue dogs.
Yeah, it sounds like quite an amazing caravan of RVs and military maneuvers to take breaks and give walks and all kinds of stuff. But, I mean, just because there's so many other stories I want to cover and other things, yeah, I mean, they're amazing in all kinds of ways. But let's get to what to me may be the salient point here of the Rosenfeld-Myers saga. So how many dogs, at least as the time of when you were writing the book, did they have at their house?
Yeah, we caught up with them in Maine,
And
they had 21 dogs at the time.
Yeah,
they lived on a property, and they fixed up the entire house to be senior dog friendly. There were ramps, a huge fenced yard. They lived on 10 acres on a lake. Everything was conducive to these dogs having a wonderful quality of life. And when we got there, it was so much fun, and actually very calming.
Yeah,
you know, you'd think with 21 dogs, I know that sounds a little funny, like who could have 21 dogs and take good care of them? But it's basically like they're running an assisted living facility for these dogs, and they have a whole system for giving them medications every morning, and it's all completely mapped out. And these dogs were so happy, and we had so much fun there. And it was actually a funny day. It was raining, and it was a challenging photo shoot day, but we had a blast.
Well, and also two things here before we maybe move on is that. At one time, this kind of further blew my mind, as if the story that you've already shared now isn't striking enough. But at one time, they had as many as 42 dogs.
That was in California.
Them.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. And you know, the thing was, through their rescue organization, they were placing hundreds and hundreds of dogs in homes, other people's homes. The ones that they would keep were the ones that were just the hardest to place.
Sure.
And so over the years, while they were still in California, they helped 4,000 dogs find homes. And then by the time they, you know, made it to in Maine, it turns out, you know, some pockets of the country, the problem of shelter dogs being euthanized isn't as terrible as it is in other places. So in Maine, they're still rescuing dogs.
Yeah.
But in the northeastern United States, it's not as dire of a situation as it is in Southern California, you know, where they used to live and where Lori lives.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. It's kind of interesting to see how, you know, a lot of animals who really do need help are being transported to other parts of the country where they could find homes.
Right.
In all kinds of innovative ways.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like a very cool, humane sort of chess game where it's like moving this piece from here to there because the prospects of those dogs finding a home over here are much, much greater than where they came from on the first part of the chessboard. And so one of the quick thing about them that just because it really stayed with me the way you described kind of when you guys were visiting, just how casually and deftly that, again, you got at that point 21 senior dogs, so of course there's accidents and things that happen, but just how smoothly and effortlessly they would just swoop up, clean something, boom, just like without breaking stride, without breaking conversation. So I thought, wow, these people are truly wonderful in all kinds of ways.
They really are dedicated and just so much fun and very real and genuine and down to earth. And this kept happening with so many. We met the most wonderful people traveling around the country getting these stories. And it was important to me to eyewitness everything.
Yeah.
And really see that these dogs were in fantastic situations, really, you know. And so we Lori and I had these madcap adventures traveling all over the country. And it was so much fun. But we kept meeting these very big-hearted, emotionally generous people. And it still keeps happening. Traveling around on the book tour, it's been unbelievable. These dog rescue people are fantastic.
Yeah, well, I have a big-hearted and big-name guy I want to get to in one sec, but let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Lori Tecoffa, the author of My Old Dog, Rescued Pets with Remarkable Second Acts, which touts the virtues of adopting senior shelter dogs. If you'd like to ask Lori a question or offer a comment, perhaps about your senior dog or otherwise, please call 813-239-9666. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. Okay, so before we go too much further, I guess we should talk about George Clooney. So, I mean, how could we not? But how did he end up in the book?
You know, Lori and I, as we were working on this and kind of plotting and scheming, you know, who to include in the book, we thought it would be fun to at least have one or two celebrities appear in the book. And, you know, you look around and try to see, you know, who out there has done this, who's taken in an older shelter animal. And I realized that George Clooney had taken in a rescued Cocker Spaniel named Einstein through a rescue group called Camp Cocker Rescue, which is a wonderful rescue group. And I knew that this story was out there, and I thought, wouldn't it be kind of fun to see whether he'd be willing to participate in the book? And lo and behold, he was. It was just so exciting, and we're so grateful that he was willing to share, you know, Einstein's story and let us go to his house in L.A. and do a big photo shoot with Einstein, his dog, and that was a whole other adventure. You know, Einstein's very, very food-focused.
Oh, yeah.
Very food-focused, and the story is hilarious. Everything about Einstein's adoption story makes you so happy, and when we were there with him, he was diving into Lori's camera bag because she had treats in there, and it was just so funny, everything about it. But we're actually really grateful that he did this for, and he's rescued a few. He and his wife have helped some more shelter dogs since.
Yeah,
Einstein.
I was going to say, it seemed like I've read about at least one or two and his wife adopted since Einstein.
Yes, they've taken in a Basset Hound named Millie from a shelter in Southern California, and then they also helped a little dog named Nate, who had mobility issues, a terrier, and they rescued this dog and gave it to George Clooney's parents in Kentucky for Christmas. And so it's great when people are doing this and are letting it be known, because people like someone as high profile as George Clooney, because it sets such a great example, and it puts this idea in people's minds that, you know, there's no stigma with shelter dogs. There's nothing to be afraid of here. It's really okay. And look at how amazing these dogs can be. Look at once they're out, and then they're in your life. I mean, the comedy and the years of adventure that they still have and all the love they have to give, it's just such a great thing to see.
Yeah. And really, it's, again, the idea about having somebody like George Clooney, it's so high profile, and of course it draws attention. But also just the specifics. I mean, at the end of the day, well, it might be hard to believe, you know, he's still just another person. So, but he's an insanely busy person, obviously, with a lot of demands on his time and energy. So if anybody, again, is saying, well, gee, I just don't know if I could swing a senior dog, and I know there's a lot more that would need to be asked of me or whatever, it's like, hey, if George Clooney can do it, you can do it. You know, I mean, really.
And by all, you know, accounts, he is very attached to his dogs.
I mean,
these are not, he was taking Einstein with him everywhere, to his movie sets, everywhere he traveled. This was a very close-knit relationship, and it was his dog. And the funny story about the day that he adopted Einstein, the story goes that he was nervous that the dog wouldn't like him, and the rescue folks from the Camp Cocker Rescue Group had told him that, you know, if Einstein doesn't seem happy here, or, you know, he's not going to be allowed to stay here. So he said that he ran to his fridge and he pulled out some meatballs. He had some turkey meatballs in the refrigerator, and he rubbed the meatballs on his shoes to, you know, to increase the chances
that Einstein
would like him. And sure enough, Einstein ran right to him, and they said, you know, he's never acted like this with anyone else before.
That's so funny,
right?
Yeah, it's like flipping the audition process on its side. But also, yeah, the other thing that really came across, which is important, and of course, just another measure of what a cool guy George Clooney seems seems, is that, yeah, this was clearly his dog. This wasn't like, okay, we brought the dog home, we did our good deed, now the housekeeper will look after the dog and walk the dog, whatever. It's like, no, George is doing it all.
Yeah, he was very interested, and you know, he didn't have to take in a dog like Einstein with chronic health problems and medication needs and ear and eye issues and all of these things, but he did, and he was, you know, finding out exactly what he needed to do to take care of this dog. Been through a lot. And so that also was very kind of moving to see.
Sure. So we'll come back to some other specific dogs and or people in a sec, but you divided the book into some specific sections, finding the good life, healing, helping, retiring with purpose, and you profile an array of dogs and people within those categories. As different as many of these dogs are from each other, I'd be interested to hear your observations about what sort of traits that you found that they actually shared.
Yes. You know, these dogs, you know, most rescue groups that help senior dogs get out of shelters, they're focusing on dogs age 7 and up, and that was kind of the categorization that we used as well. And dogs in this age group tend to be calmer and, you know, less rambunctious than puppies. They seem very grateful, and I don't think that's even anthropomorphizing. It might be a bit, but maybe the better word is relieved to be somewhere where they're safe. Everyone across the board said that they could tell that their dog knew that they were in a better situation than they had been, and a dog would be aware of that. I mean, from a scary, loud, disorienting kennel situation, you know, to a cushy home where someone's really, you know, taking care, good care of you. And the other thing about dogs in this age bracket, in addition to just being, you know, calmer and easier to care for and already house trained and all these other bonuses, is that they are more focused on you at that age. Mm-hmm. And so there's no need to worry about failing to bond as closely with a dog because you haven't had it since puppyhood. These dogs and their humans were so bonded and close. They had such a great, fantastic relationship that you would never know that the relationship began, you know, at age 10. You know, for the dog, you know, you just saw this incredible friendship and real relationship. So that was very encouraging to see. And these people, their stories are all so different. That was another thing that I really wanted to have happen in this book. I didn't want the stories to be repetitive.
Yeah.
But these people from all different walks of life, ranging in age from, you know, maybe their mid-20s to their late 80s, were so, their lives got so exponentially better because they took this dog in, and it helped them. The dogs helped them heal from different things that they had endured, or and just helped them in so many ways. So that was a really, you know, remarkable thing to see too, just how much these dogs still had to give.
I think you made another point, because I think, again, for anybody who's saying, oh, well, senior dog, sounds like cool, but mixed bag. I mean, the idea that the connection that senior dogs make with the people who adopt them is often quick, and either way is very profound. It might be counterintuitive versus, as you kind of alluded to, like, you think, well, I brought her home as a puppy, so we had all these years to bond and connect, but it seems like you're almost on an express lane. That dog, like, said, hey, you sprung me from that shelter. I'm already loving you from day one, and then we're making a kind of a more profound connection really quickly.
Right, and that came up again and again as a recurring theme. So it does happen, and it's just so wonderful to see it, and to know that these dogs also can learn a lot. And, you know, we even have in the back of the book, it was kind of nice, Dr. Marty Becker, a very well-known veterinarian, and his daughter, Mikkel Becker, she's an animal trainer and behaviorist. They have all sorts of healthcare tips and also training tips. So to think that an older dog can't learn new tricks, I mean, not to use the well-worn phrase, really, really can. And there were all kinds of training and behavior tips in there to help anyone who has an older dog, anyone who has a dog who's aging and might need some adaptive gear, might have to start using, you know, any special equipment or anything, tips on how to train them and how to keep them mentally stimulated and physically stimulated within reason. You know, it really matters, and it makes a big difference, and it can help them live a lot longer.
Yeah.
And so the tips in the back of the book, there were some ideas in there that I mean, I have older dogs, and I've got to confess, I wouldn't have thought of some of those things myself, and now I'm doing them. So that was really interesting to see too, how much we could do with these dogs.
I mean, Dr. Becker, great guy, actually a previous guest on Talking Animals, but yeah, there was stuff in there that I thought, wow. As you said, I mean, some of those things are kind of basic, but some things are like, wow, I would have never That would have never occurred to me. And so, you know, we'll maybe come back to this too, but there's also, in addition to the information from Dr. Becker and his daughter, it's chock full of resources for animal welfare groups, but also organizations that are sort of senior-minded and one way or another, or just, and others too. So there's a lot of information if you want to support organizations that are supporting senior dogs. There's that. If you want to find a senior dog wherever you are that's done, broken out by state, there's that. And then just groups that do good work on animals' behalf, generally there's information there. So it's got a great wealth of info just as sort of a bonus prize. So
you know, and that resource guide is so, it's 12 pages with very tiny font, right? I mean, this
yeah
is kind of exciting to see. This is the encouraging aspect to all of this, is that there is a true senior dog rescue movement that literally didn't exist about a decade ago. Older dogs just did not get adopted from shelters. They did not get sprung. And now this idea, it's like an idea that time has come, and people are realizing that, and it's kind of started in a very grassroots, very local way in different cities around the country. You know, there'd be one woman or, you know, one couple would notice that, you know, isn't it kind of sad that the older dogs are never getting out of the shelter? And even if they were in no-kill shelters, they would just languish there and nobody would take them home. And so these efforts would begin slowly and in a very local way. And now there's this whole, you know, I mean, this for me was an exciting thing to kind of connect the dots and put this all in one place and just show the sweep of this, how extensive this effort is now. There is a state-by-state guide. And some states don't have a senior-specific rescue group, but maybe the local shelter has a special program to help people take in the senior dogs. You know, it's always worth it to ask at any local shelter and just see what programs they might have.
Well, again, the information is great. And again, the book itself really kind of captures this moment in time where there is this movement. And I have to believe that the initial thing that sort of brought you and Lori together, just the response that first piece about Lori and seeing those photos, people went bonkers for that. I mean, that I think was probably just the seedlings or just the early stages of people saying, actually, we are really interested in this and we do love those kind of dogs, and how do we get involved? So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strassman. I'm speaking with Lori Tikoff, the author of My Old Dog, Rescued Pets with Remarkable Second Acts. If you'd like to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So I'm just going to read a couple of quick emails that came in. One, sometimes humor or facetiousness doesn't come across in email, but I think this one does. This guy says, please ask your guest to cheer up. So I thought that was good. And then another emailer says, great guest, can't wait to get the book. Thanks for your joyful guest. This is super important. There are so many advantages to adopting a senior. How many dog stories are there in the book?
You know, I should know this, right? It's either 19 or 20, and they're all very, very different, broken out into these different sections, and there are lots of different breeds, lots of different, and every story is so happy. Some of them will affect you, you know, more than others as far as, you know, packing a bit of an emotional wallop. There's a story of the veteran who with PTSD who was helped by an older dog, and that story was maybe perhaps the hardest one for me to write.
Oh, yeah, how so?
I wanted to handle that very carefully, and it that was just a very emotionally charged chapter, but I wanted to pull back, and my big goal too with these chapters was not to let them become sappy or overwrought, or
yeah,
I really can't stand sappiness, so I, you know, it's just kind of getting out of the way and letting the stories move.
Yeah.
And so, but some of them, you know, were people really going through very difficult chapters or very difficult transitions. In this case, the veteran was having a very hard time adjusting the civilian life, returning home, and felt like no one understood him. That's how he felt. And then he's able to be reunited with his military dog, the dog who he had worked with in Afghanistan, Chaney,
yeah,
which was quite an ordeal. And it took quite a bit to be reunited with this dog once the dog retired from military work and sniffing out explosives in Afghanistan. And once he got Chaney back, he started to sleep again. He was able to sleep through the night. He talked to Chaney all the time, and that was therapeutic. And it's just this story of healing from something so bad. I mean, he really had been through something so hard, and when you're so relieved. So this is the thing I really want to stress, that the book is happy, and you end up being so relieved for the dog, but also so relieved for the person.
For sure, that was...
Dog. It's like everyone's at their peak of contentment. Nobody dies in this book.
Right. No, absolutely.
Don't need to turn away from these stories.
Right.
They're very happy.
You don't have to avert your eyes. Yeah. No, that was really... Because, again, we've done a few shows here over the years about service dogs for veterans. That are contending with PTSD, and we've had a couple in the studio where I've gotten more than a little weepy when the guy has described about not being able to sleep and all the stuff that was happening before his dog, and then just the way that dog just changed everything. So it's just another measure of how magical and powerful dogs can be. Well, yeah. So let's get into maybe a few other dogs and or people that are in the book. So one comes to mind is Akilah, the feral dog, because it wasn't in the healing section of the book, but like many vignettes here that weren't, it could easily fit there.
Yes. Yeah. Akilah was a dog who had lived for almost 10 to 11 years at Best Friends Animal Society's animal sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. It's a beautiful, huge sanctuary, you know, in the Red Rock country. And that sanctuary is so massive, and there are a lot of animals who live there for their entire lives because it seems like maybe they have behavioral issues or other issues that would make it very difficult for them to ever live in a home. And Akilah became a feral dog because when she was little, she was mistaken for a wolf. And when you see the photos of this dog in the book, this dog looks like a wolf, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So here's this dog who wound up in a wolf sanctuary and had very little human contact and missed this key window of socialization and, you know, dealing with humans. And then over time, people at the wolf sanctuary realize this isn't a wolf, this is a dog, and then transfer her over to the Best Friends sanctuary in Utah. And then she lived there until she was 11. And at that point in her life, her caregivers were noticing that she was showing up, and she was very skittish and very, very nervous about being around people. She would very, you know, cautiously allow a little bit of grooming to happen. And, you know, caregiving like that, her, you know, for her veterinary needs, but it was hard. But they started to notice that she was wanting a little bit more human attention and a little bit more affection. And they started thinking, could she live out the end of her life and, you know, her final years in the comfort of an actual home with a family? And so they kind of put a little search out and found just the right family, this couple in Salt Lake City, who fell in love with her photos. They were just kind of bewitched by the photos of this dog, which I see why too.
Sure.
You can't stop staring at these photos
right.
of this
yeah.
dog. And so they end up making the trek. It was something like a 7-hour road trip. They drive to go meet her and take her home. And it was hard. It was not an easy road, you know, to get this dog to be socialized enough to truly be in their home without crying. She always wanted to be in the backyard, and she was nervous about being around them. But the wife, Stacy Chappelle, who took this dog in, just worked and worked and worked with Akilah, and had a positive reinforcement training regimen involving chicken and a signature red blanket. She'd put this red blanket out with chicken and sit there and then brush her.
Yeah.
And Akilah used to being brushed. And then over time, this dog came around and was a normal house dog. I mean, it's the story of her coming around and being just like every other dog in this book, you know, so... relieved to be somewhere where she could get real affection, and they could, you know, really be. She was always a little more skittish than your typical dog, but they could love on her. And to think that dog came around and could get a second chance, and so that was a pretty extreme example. That's a caregiving level that maybe most of us wouldn't be in a position to give.
Right,
but there are people out there who are willing to do it.
Well, and it was so, to me, it was, again, the way you sort of captured the description of how she slowly introduced grooming to a dog that otherwise really couldn't be touched. And this book, in some ways, small and large, is replete with, like, transformation stories. Mm-hmm. And you really, I mean, you feel like sort of you can almost feel palpably the physical and of course, emotional and soulful transformation of Akilah through this woman's incredible patience and just thinking that, hey, we can make this work, and we can get to the point where we can pet and otherwise, you know, have semi-normal contact with this feral
right.
dog.
And to see her, you know, you see it happen. It's there. It's documented in the photographs. You know, you see how she comes around. You know, I think the reason that all of these stories are as transforming as they are is that they're rooted in the kindness of humans. genuine kindness and compassion, you know, they always win. It's always really the most powerful thing, you know, genuine love and compassion and kindness. And that comes through again and again. And again, my big goal is not to be sappy, but it's real. It makes a difference. And people heal. Animals heal.
Yeah.
We all deserve to be treated well. Everyone deserves to be treated with kindness and dignity. And when these little creatures are, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
To see how much they give you back.
Yeah, it's again, the stories often have as much of an element of what's either healing or transformation with the human as with the dog, or sometimes just the incredible sensitivity you allude to. Like Cullen comes to mind, so almost a local dignitary is at this children's hospital in Orlando, and switched basically from being a service dog to a therapy dog. But even just like from what you were saying, just to pick up on that, I mean, the sensitivity of this woman, I guess, Christy Baker, I want to say, recognizing that Cullen, once she kind of recognized that he could no longer work on her behalf as the service dog that he had been, then she was concerned about how Cullen would feel at the house if there was a new dog that was kind of the main dog, and therefore Cullen would be a second-class citizen. I mean, just stuff like that just seems so powerful. And again, it just shows you in both directions kind of some really extraordinary things going on.
Right, and Cullen is such an amazing dog right there in the Orlando area, and he, I had a book event with him not too long ago. It was so much fun to see him again, and to know that everything worked out just fine. But Christy Baker, this woman in a wheelchair who realized that he had aged out of being able to physically care for her. Sometimes he would even one of his jobs was to pull her in her wheelchair when she physically couldn't do it, and he couldn't physically do the job anymore. And she was so concerned about what would become of him and where, how would she get to see him? Because she loved him so much. She was, talk about being closely attached, right? And the reason that Cullen, there was a question of where he would go, was because he had been raised in a prison and trained to be a service dog in a prison. And so often these service dogs will go back to their puppy raisers when they're done with, if need be. If they can't stay with the person they cared for, then they often will go back to the puppy raiser. But in this case, there was no person like that to return the dog to. And so one thing led to another. And through Canine Companions for Independence, which was the organization that had provided the dog free of charge to Christy for, you know, she found a friend through Canine Companions who was willing to take the dog and just adopt the dog and let the dog live with her for the rest of her life and then visit with Christy all the time. So now Cullen and Christy still get to see each other all the time. And it made it so much easier because Christy was just panicking about losing that friendship.
Well, I guess another Florida kind of story comes to mind, too, just as you're talking about that. This Jimmy Chi, I mean, as you might imagine, we talk a lot on the show about greyhounds, rescued greyhounds, et cetera.
Yes.
So Jimmy Chi's story really resonated with me. Maybe you could sort of just briefly recount that for our listeners.
Yes. So Jimmy Chi is a greyhound who was adopted by a man in the Orlando area who is on kidney dialysis and is having other health issues that actually required him to retire early. It's something he never anticipated happening. He's a very, very hardworking guy, loves being busy. And then he was kind of felled by these health issues that just kind of walloped him, came out of nowhere. And he was he was struggling with some depression. And there's a wonderful greyhound rescue group based in the Orlando area, Greyhound Pets of America Senior Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And so they help specifically senior. What was fascinating to me was to learn that, you know, fortunately, there are so many, you know, wonderful, long-established greyhound rescue groups that will help dogs get adopted after they're done with their racing careers, you know, at age 2, 3, or 4. And those dogs can find homes thanks to these rescue efforts. But the dogs that were winners on the track and were actual money makers on the track are then expected to do, after they're done racing, then they are expected to produce puppies.
Of course,
you know, for several years.
Sure.
And then that'll happen. And then when they're about 8 and they can no longer do that, then it's very difficult to find a home for those greyhounds. So, you know, with the great bloodlines, right? You know, that everybody wanted. And so, but those dogs can have a difficult time finding a home. So this group in the Orlando area helps those dogs find homes. And Jimmy Chi was, you know, one of these older dogs that was helped. And sometimes what they're doing too is that they're just finding greyhounds in shelters. you know, that just ended up in a shelter just like any other older dog might end up in a shelter. You know, somebody just had a greyhound and couldn't keep the dog for whatever reason. So sometimes they're pulling older senior greyhounds from shelters, and sometimes it's the situation where they're done with their breeding phase of their career, and then they need a place to go. So the way that Jimmy Chi ended up connecting with this man, Bob Fitzgerald, and helping him during this transition to, you know, he was lonely, and it was hard to be home alone, and his wife still worked full time, and he was, you know, kind of rattling around his little home, and but then Jimmy Chi brought all this joy and meaning into his life because he had this very, very close companion, and boy, did they bond.
Right.
And you're so, it's again one of those examples where you're so happy
for
Bob,
sure,
and you're so happy for Jimmy.
Well, and also, so even beyond that, or as part of that, something that's specific to greyhounds like that is that the total calm of Jimmy Chi, as I recall, really made a big difference in this scenario. And it's the way those greyhounds often are, just really so quiet and calm and just comforting. And obviously that guy took great comfort from Jimmy Chi being in the house. So Laura, we're almost, in fact, we're a little bit over time, but I want to read one quick email, and then I want to just have like a short, unfortunately tiny thing just about Nico Case. But let me read this email that just came in, just because I think it's nice to kind of share in the other direction too. This says, I rescued a sweet girl Jack Russell Chihuahua mix who I named Golda Meir after the first woman politician I'd ever heard of. I call her Goldie. Goldie has truly, quote unquote, rescued me. Such love this dog has, and grateful for the new life she's given. So a nice testimonial to the, once again, the virtues of senior dogs. So just in like 30 or 45 seconds, if you can, tell us how Nico Case got involved and wrote the foreword for the book.
Well, you know, Nico Case is a big animal lover, lifelong animal lover, and she's an ambassador for Best Friends Animal Society. Lori Fasaro works as a photographer.
Right.
And she loves, Nico Case is a really big fan of the work of Best Friends Animal Society.
For sure.
You know, their no-kill mission, you know, to really bring an end to pets being, you know, put down in shelters, period. That's the goal. And so we were able to connect with Nico Case through Best Friends Animal Society. And when she heard about the opportunity to be part of a book like this, you know, she was very eager to help. And so she, in her foreword to the My Old Dog book, it's a very poignant and very moving foreword, because she describes, you know, with some honesty, you know, how much dogs helped her through her difficult childhood. And it's and how they've always been there for her. And you hear about her, some of her greatest loves, you know, her dog, her first dog that she really bonded with was Buffy, lived to be 21 years old. Her dog Liza, you know, lived to be to a ripe old age, and you know, she describes her greyhound Lloyd and others. And so, you know, you see how again, I'm telling you, no matter who you are, no matter, you know, what your walk of life, these dogs make such a difference and make life so much better.
It was really powerful, and I mean, in some ways, just as sort of powerful and poignant in some of her best songs. So I thought that, wow, that was amazing. We're big Nico Case fans here, and she's been on the show before, and I remember her talking a lot about her childhood and just the difference that animals made. So it really made sense. So, Laura, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Laura Coffey. Her book is My Old Dog, Rescued Pets with Remarkable Second Acts. There's a website for her, Laura T. Coffey, that's spelled Coffey. .com, and there's also a website for the book, myolddogbook.com. Laura, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and for the fabulous book with all these great stories of all these senior dogs and their humans.
Thank you very much for having me. It was really fun.
Cool. Thanks, Laura. Take care now. In a few moments, I'll chat briefly with Rayanna Sachs of the Little Cats Rescue about some medical challenges she's facing and ways you could help, like adopting a cat or two from the organization. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner with a piece that hooks into our talk with Laura Coffey, but may also be somewhat relevant to our forthcoming chat with Rayanna Sachs. Here's Greg Fitzsimmons with a piece called Adopting a Dog in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals.
So we rescued a puppy, which is great. You rescued a puppy before. Okay, beautiful. It's a great thing. Millions of dogs are put to sleep every year because there's not enough homes. And you go in and you're a hero. You go save one. You walk in there and you think it's going to be easy. They're like, I'll take that one. They're like, oh, not so fast, asshole. First, you got to fill out this 28-page application, right? Name, social security number. If you and your wife divorce, who gets custody of the dog? I don't know. We never talked about it. Thanks for planting that seed for us. And then they set up a home inspection. I'm not making this up. Literally, woman shows up to my house. Clipboard, Little beard, light beard. Didn't see it at first. And now she's looking around my house while I stand out front waiting. Just nervous that she's going to come out and be like, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and kill the dog. This doesn't feel right to let him live here the way you do. Take him out back and just shoot him. We feel pretty good when we rescue a dog, don't we? Right? We feel like heroes. Meanwhile, there's two types of shelters in the country. There's shelters for dogs, the Humane Society. Shelters for people, halfway house. Not even a whole house, half a house. And then we rescue from the other one. We grab a dog, we bring him home, and we wash him, and we fix him. We bring him to bed, we pet him, and we hold him, take him for a walk. And then we walk around a human that's laid out on the sidewalk to pick up from the dog that we rescued. What's wrong with that picture? Why don't we rescue from the other place? Just go in there. I'll take that guy. Bring him out. Take him home. Give him a steak and a shave. A little corduroy bed in the corner. Come on, Freckles. Let's take a walk. It's Dennis. I told you my name's Dennis. Freckles. Come on, let's go outside. Been outside a lot. Kind of want to stay inside for a while. Your friend comes over. He's cute. What is he? I think he's Dutch.
Okay, well, unfortunately, was not able to connect with Rayanna, so sorry about that. I tried her a few different times and got long voicemails each time. I was hoping she might pick up. But anyway, so just let me sort of summarize some of what we might have talked about. She, as I alluded to earlier, is having some real medical difficulties, and so as a result, I think is going to undergo surgery in the coming months, and therefore the little cat rescue operation definitely needs to, at least temporarily, to alter the way it functions. So among the things that means is there are a number of cats that she needs to adopt out and find homes for. And so there is the website is thelittlecats, that's plural, rescue.org. And you could check out some of the cats that are available. And also there's other ways that you could help out too, because it's kind of a one-man band in many respects with the Little Cats Rescue. So there's other ways that you might help out. If you're not able to adopt a cat, maybe you could help out with some tasks and chores either before or after she's recovering from her surgery. Or other ways you can help out, including perhaps a donation, other things. So anyway, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to speak with her directly, but it's thelittlecatsrescue.org, and they're also on Facebook, so you can find out more about the organization, see some of the cats that you could bring into your home and help out Rayanna, and that would be fantastic. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Today on Radioactivity, they'll be hearing about legendary local photographer Bud Lee's role in a film showing on PBS called Revolution 67. And, of course, also Rob will be talking about the results of Super Tuesday primary. So that's coming up at 11 this morning here on WMF 88.5. Meanwhile, as a prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a fabulous Talking Animals t-shirt. Let's hit a couple of quick announcements. Want to mention that Will Tuttle, who's been a guest on the show a few times over the years and was actually on with Rob not too long ago, will be giving a lecture March 13th at Florida Federation of Garden Clubs in Winter Park, Florida, 407-647-7016 to find out more information. Will is the author of The World Peace Diet. Fascinating guy in all kinds of ways and a great speaker. So you might want to check that out on Sunday, March 13th. I think that's probably all we'll get into today. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, which sort of splits the difference between cats and dogs. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Talking around.
Okay, we'll take any guesses that come in off the air, because we have just about to reach the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Again, Rob Laura is up next with Radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday when my guest will be Darcy Dennett, who directed the documentary The Champions, which tells the story of the pit bulls rescued from Michael Vick's dogfighting ring. That's next Wednesday, March 9th. Hope you'll join me for that. Also, we'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, which features all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of all the past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Thanks again for listening. This is WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee and Beyond, Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.